Hello, this is Ricky here from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, and you're watching Teacher Learning Cast with Pete Herrera and Benjamin Stewart. So there you go.
To Teacher Learning Cast, episode number 6, this day, the 23rd of March, 2018. My name is Benjamin Stewart from beautiful Aguascalientes.
Hello, everybody. This is Petey Herrera, also here in Aguascalientes. Today, a special transmission on the 22nd at night, Friday, when everybody is going around and hanging around and dropping jobs for a weekend. We are here doing this video for you and hopefully to keep on with this idea of transmitting and casting, sharing experiences from teaching. And Benjamin Stewart, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely, Petey. Yeah, really enjoy this. We started a little over a month ago, and certainly is a learning experience, having the opportunity to share some ideas, what we're doing in the classroom. Meeting up with some other people. We had a great week last week with Ken Bauer, our first guest, as we're always looking for guests, always looking for others to participate in our broadcast. And we want to extend an invitation really to anyone who wants to share with us. If they would like to be a part of this broadcast, you may find information about basically everything that we do with this podcast in Facebook under Teacher Learning Cast. So feel free to post questions, provide your feedback. We're always looking for ways to improve our broadcast. So do let us know what you think. And every week we have different topics related to teaching and learning that if you want to be a part of the conversation, we certainly encourage you to do so.
Yes, and you can also contact us through our personal websites. We have Benjamin's website, which is BenjaminLStewart.wordpress.com, and my own website, which is homers2000.wixsite.com/PDHA. It's a Y in PD at the end, and then HA. And you can reach us, and this time we will be talking this Friday evening, but we will be transmitting, posting this video tomorrow morning so we can get used to Saturday's morning, 8:15 is the appointment with us for special occasions, and due to personal situations, we are doing it Friday night this time. And next week, which is vacations here in Aguascalientes, a long weekend, kind of a pre-vacation, vacations in the rest of the country here in Mexico. And we are also going to be doing something kind of different, but the idea is to keep on seeing you on Saturdays at 8:15 in the morning in the live transmission, but obviously we'll always have the available on-demand video. Last week, as Ben mentioned, we had a very interesting talk about flipped classroom with Ken Bauer, and you can watch the video in the back. I have it as a background last week video, so you can see what you missed, but you can go back to it. And today's topic, we will be discussing about deep learning, something that Benjamin has for us. And we will discuss a little bit something that is intriguing me about in the classroom, activities versus objectives, plus the personal experience of the week to share with you. So, Benjamin, first topic, the deep learning situation. Tell us.
Yeah, so I was thinking about our topics for this week, and I just recently purchased a book on my Kindle. I'm a big reader of using Kindle for electronic books, and I came across deep learning, and this is a huge topic. As I started looking on my socials, came across a lot of different articles in my Twitter feed about deep learning, and I think it's going to be a topic that we can certainly expand on more, and certainly as I get more into this book, I'd like to bring up some things that I'm learning. But I think that today what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about this idea of deep learning, and I think it really links to the more practical views that you're going to speak about here in the second segment about objectives. So I'm curious, Pity, what you think about some of these topics that that I came across in deep learning. The first is this article here under EdSource. There's a couple of quotes here I wanted to share, and I think it's really interesting because most of the deep learning articles that I read really relate to general education, and I always like to read these general ed articles to see how they relate to English language learning, since that's the context that that we're in as we're teacher trainers for English language educators. The first quote that I came across says, "Not only do students learn, but they develop the speaking and writing skills they need to convey their viewpoints." And this idea of conveying viewpoints, I think, is really important, especially in English language learning, is that we're not only just focusing on the development of skills, but we're actually helping learners, individuals, human beings, form opinions and helping them be able to maybe argue a point, maybe persuade someone something. Maybe it's looking at how to resolve conflict, resolve some sort of problem, if we want to think in terms of problem-based learning. I think it's easy for us to kind of get caught up in the skills-based aspect of English language learning, and we forget sometimes of the higher level thinking or the critical thinking that we also want to promote. And I know the argument a lot of times is, well, lower level students, maybe a level one English language learner, is not going to be able to articulate in a certain way to even think about critical thinking or something along those lines. But I think that we can certainly do more. And I really kind of throw this out there to all educators, especially English language educators, about how far we can push our students to not only focus on the skills, but also the thinking aspect. This particular article also came from the perspective of schools when they mentioned that schools teach standard subjects, but many also include a collaboration among teachers so that those subjects are taught together. So this article speaks from a learning standpoint and from a pedagogical standpoint, in the sense that, you know, if you're working in a school in a formal context, you know, it's I think it's important for us to also reach out and feel like, well, you know, this is not something that I need to take on by myself. Maybe I need to reach out to a content teacher. In our case, PD, maybe the English teachers reach out to the Spanish speakers who are teaching core classes like history and science and math, and really find ways to link those subjects into the English language learning experience. I'm not sure, you know, how you think or if this has come up with your experience working with teachers from a practicum standpoint.
Yes, actually, I was thinking about the idea of the courses on ESP that we teach, in which the origins of the ESP and the main books about it, they talked about the idea of not really having general English, but having English already determined by purpose. And it's pretty much, I think it goes around this deep learning. And focusing not only on the skills, the abilities, the form, and the immediate meaning of the language, but the deep purposes of it and the internalization. I think from what you just said, I'm going with a little bit with the idea of what I heard from Dr. Gabor Mate, I think it's the name, and he talks about feelings and learning, and it's one of the main aspects. I think it goes along this. So in the practicum strand, yes. I think one of the things we work and maybe not as explicit as deep learning, but we manage it as the context and the function, creating in the students the need for really using the language beyond the sake of just learning the phrase and using it, the other way around, create the need and then have them to look for the ways to achieve communication.
Yeah, and the same article, they mention problem-based learning, and I am going to be curious to know what your viewpoints are in the next segment, really looking at how to plan for that. If we're looking at problem-based learning more in terms of per unit, so maybe that, you know, we can, I think of cases where maybe we're planning for the day, if we're talking about a day being a 50-minute class or 90-minute class, but really also look taking the planning of learning objectives to at the unit level, where maybe we can incorporate or involve some sort of problem-based learning where the learning experience kind of extends over a period of several days, right? So, you know, maybe there's some small short-term objectives that are met, but also kind of longer terms. But really looking at problem-based learning and seeing how that can be part of the English language learning experience through the creation or promotion of critical thinking skills. The second article I wanted to share is related to deep learning. And in this article, they talk about competencies and they list six, and I'd like to share these six with you here. So the first competency, mastering rigorous academic content. So for me, that speaks to the creative thinking aspect. Number two, learning how to think critically and solve problems, and that's very specific related to that that topic. Number three, working collaboratively. Number four, communicating effectively. Number five, directing one's own learning. So maybe more in terms of self-learning or autonomous learning. And number six, developing an academic mindset, a belief of one's ability to grow. And that last one I think is interesting because that kind of speaks, for me anyway, of the importance of having some sort of kind of repository of work. You know, we've talked a lot about e-portfolios, whatever that might look like, but that there's some sort of paper trail or evidence that the learner leaves behind that is illustrative of that learner's knowledge, skills, and values. And so I think looking at deep learning from these six competencies, not to really dive in too deeply on all of these, but I think it's interesting and I think even a challenge, okay, I will have to admit that a challenge to really look at all these six within an English language learning environment, but I think it's at least worth thinking about and seeing again how far we can promote our students and help our students not only develop the skills but also these other competencies that, you know, would really apply to any language or any learner regardless of the subject.
Yes, Ben, I'm kind of recalling with us all this information different topics that we have discussed before, the networks, the learning networks that we discussed in previous in chapter four we discussed it, and how it fits in all these ideas of working collaboratively and having the abilities to communicate effectively. At the same time, you develop it's kind of interconnected, all these six aspects. And I was also thinking Programa START here in Aguascalientes, the national program PENIEF in primarias. For if anybody is watching from the program, they may know better this, and that the lesson plans they work with are programmed by projects, and they are not focused in a one-day objective. They have a series of classes to achieve one small project in which they have to work with a structure, they have to work with vocabulary, they have to work with social relationships among students. They have to work also with other kind of skills and competencies to be developed to create things in which language is applied and through which language is developed. So I observe in this kind of classrooms is that somehow it looks like learners are having a few contact with the language and it looks kind of slow, but then all of a sudden you go to a third, fourth grade kids primary school and boom, they are already speaking and understanding and saying things because all of this kind of work, which I think it's very linked to this deep learning idea and all these six aspects and competencies to master that you mentioned, that are mentioned in this article.
Yeah, I think it's really about trying to find purpose and having students recognize the purpose of what they're doing, that there should be a reason as to what they're doing, why they're doing it, and of course, something that's relevant to them, that they can relate to, that of course is part of their interest, maybe it's part of what their goals are. But I think, you know, for all of this, regardless of what kind of critical thinking skills we're trying to promote, it boils down to purpose. The last thing I want to share here is an image that I think shows now I don't know if this is big enough, Petey, if this shows up where you can see these two lists, one for 2020 and the other for 2015. Is that big enough, you think? Let's see if I can, not sure if I can, yeah, I'll try to make this a little bit bigger. But I came across this today, in fact, is interesting because it compares list of specific skills that they are suggesting that will be important in the year 2020. And if we compare these two lists from 2015, it's interesting to see the differences and similarities, in fact. The first one being complex problem solving. That seems to be the number one for both lists. But it's interesting that in the 2020 list, critical thinking really jumped up from four to number two. It jumped up to the pretty high. And creativity from 10, ranked 10, it jumped up to three. And I think that's really interesting. And I have my own personal views of the meaning of creativity and what that looks like from a practical standpoint. And again, that's probably another topic we can discuss. But I think that just by comparing these two lists, we can kind of see a tendency between how we expect students to interact in the classroom. And I think we can look at this new list in this list of 2020, more critical thinking really looking at just, I think, kind of creativity types of opportunities where we're trying to create environments where students are actually making something. If we want to look at kinesthetic learning, you know, making something with their hands, communicating and negotiating, you know, it's interesting to me that the negotiating is kind of at the end of this list because I still think that there's room for a lot of focus on this idea of negotiation, because even with any type of collaborative work, there is going to be some level of negotiation or compromise or consensus. And I think we face this every day in real life. I think that it's equally important to recognize within the classroom, even the English language classroom, that these same types of behaviors that we would expect in real life, we might try to bring into the classroom. But I wanted to share this comparison, not necessarily go through every one of these, but I think it is interesting how we think that some of these skills are going to be changing over time. And I would dare say that the technologies that we use will reflect these trends as well.
Yeah, it looks really interesting because it makes me think right now, what about the kind of projects we are assigning students? It raises the question about the extent of the kind of paperwork we ask students to do when you ask them to research for bibliography or information. But what do you ask them to do about it? And are they really doing this critical thinking? Are they really doing this kind of intrapersonal work, like exchange with other students and working with other people, this negotiation, all of these different aspects. And it makes me wonder, well, what about these huge, huge papers we ask them and type and extract information and empty it there against small, simple tasks which make them maybe have a higher level of thinking or deep thinking through doing a small task like a small essay, like it comes from mine itself and not from just the source and the book. And it's a kind of thing you struggle every day. What are they going to write about? For example, in my case, in the practicum strand, they do a lot of reflection. They come with the idea that reflection is a description of what happened in the classroom, and very few analysis or deep thinking about any aspect. So I try to get to the smalls and get through the critical incidents one by one, and having students do one thing at a time, so they can start not just sticking to the descriptions or very superficial analysis, but try to get through a major thinking, which sometimes I also stay at the surface, and I also need this back and forth with them to realize that I'm just touching the surface and we need analysis. So I guess these articles that you brought today are really interesting in that sense, because it gives a view of what I would say comes forward, but not really. I think I've seen this kind of work in different schools already, and in Mexico and mainly outside Mexico too, when I was teaching in Southampton in Spanish. The kind of projects that students were asked were this, where major thinking is required.
Yeah, I mean, I think this really involves looking at from the planning to the implementation to the evaluation or reflection of one's teachers of what they're doing in the classroom. We really encourage and want to know how you're promoting deep learning or deeper learning, critical thinking skills, especially in your English language classroom. What kind of challenges do you face? What kind of successes have you had? How do you plan for it? We really want to hear from you if you would like to share some of your thoughts about how you promote deep learning in the classroom. Feel free to share some of your ideas in Facebook. You can follow us there under Teacher Learning Cast. Let us know. We would really like to hear from you. And some of these topics, we really have no problem going back if later in another week or in the future sometime, if you want to discuss these, we certainly can do that. But I think that this idea of deep learning really links to the next segment, Petey, that you were going to talk about regarding planning. And I'm really curious what you think about how this really ties in to these objectives. And from even maybe a short-term perspective, from a day class to maybe a unit over a series of maybe several days or even weeks.
Right. I think the topics match perfectly. Talking about this deep and this view of self and the learning objectives and the development objectives for students in this kind of different perspective of the classroom match precisely with what I wanted to discuss today. And mainly, again, you know, I'm more with the idea of raising questions in this sense. At a right, maybe formulas that work one way or in a different way with students. But this is one of the aspects that I've come to realize that may interfere big time with the happenings in the classroom and the successful achievement of the development of the language. Planning the classes based on one activity or on one core activity or one task you want students to do, or really think about the objectives of it. What do you want students to achieve through doing something? And I think we have discussed this before, you and I, in the halls in at work. For example, things like activities like games. activities like activities which are complex, elaborated in the process, which they have many steps to follow. Maybe activities like the ones I mentioned, huge assignments for students to go and do research. And the point is, how much do you get to achieve in language classes, language learning classes, how much you get to achieve of the practice you want students to have, if it is a presentation of information, or if they are really using the language, and how they are using it, and if all of the steps and all of the small activities that they go performing in the process, are they worth it for the amount of practice or exposure to the language? That would be mainly the term involving practice of exposure to the new language that is the objective. How important is for the teacher to really understand what the objectives in the class are with difference to the task and activities to perform during the class? So that's pretty much the idea, Ben. I don't know what you think about this main setting about activity versus the objective.
Well, yeah, I'm curious. I've got a lot of questions actually for you, but I wanted to start by asking, you know, when you work with your students, how much time or how much of a challenge is it for students for them to recognize the learning objective versus communicating that objective to their students? And then I know it's related, but, you know, what's your experience been with those two aspects, how they look at it as far as being able to recognize, and we can talk in a few minutes what those objectives are, how those are articulated, but just from your experience, what seems to be the greatest challenge, just coming up with recognizing the objective, or communicating that and making it clear to their learners?
I think it's both, because they are linked, and one depends on the other. I come to see students that have a lesson plan which seems complete, which even has a stated objective, a set of stages to and steps to follow through the lesson plan. But at the end, when you actually ask them for examples of what you expect the students to answer, they don't still have it clear in their mind. They still don't know it. So when they come to me with the lesson plan, we start to discuss, and sooner or later, I come with the question. So let's suppose we are in the classroom and you are the student, and now we are in the core activity in which the teacher is going to realize whether you are developing the skill or the understanding you expect. So tell me what you as a student are able to do right now with support or not support, which is a different kind of topic, right? With the mediation of something or not, but what are you going to say, or what are you going to be able? Let's think about the skill: listening, speaking, reading, writing. What are you going to be able to understand from the listening, or understand from the reading, or speak, or be able to create in writing? And that's when the teachers themselves, they realize that they have the idea, they know the linguistic topic, the structural topic, or the name, the grammatical name, and they yet do not have an example of what it's expected. And then I tell them, how do you expect the students to answer this if you, the teacher, is not able to answer the question? So it takes me to wonder if they have the proper material prompts and questions as to make students go towards the objective. So that's the first thing on one end. So if they don't have it in clear, how do they transmit to students? What I come to realize is that they also have the idea of doing something in the classroom to try to promote in students doing something with the language, but they actually don't know what the outcome of that language is going to be. Unless they are talking about simple isolated vocabulary, that's when everybody knows. I want them to say this set of words and that's it. Or I want them to, even when we talk about a sentence, they know the structure of the sentence, but they don't even have an expectation of an example. So that's pretty much the idea.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So let's get into, what is an objective? So when you're saying that if they're not able to recognize the objective, I know we've talked a lot about categorizing, and this is coming from kind of a content and language integrated learning or CLIL or SIUP
right.
Idea, sheltered a protocol. And the idea here is, I mean, you can categorize objectives from either linguistic objectives, like language
right.
Objectives, or content. Now, content objectives. Now, I know that's a very general, two categories. Yeah. But I found it interesting, too, the video that you shared where they talked about Maurer's criteria for instructional objectives, where he divided it up into three, what the students need to do, whether they can perform complete the performance, and also the criteria of acceptance or acceptable performance, and trying to incorporate those three within the objectives. I know there's the ABC method, different ways of looking at it. What's the most practical and, in your view, the best, most useful way to articulate these objectives when you're looking at teaching English as an additional language?
I think it depends on the teacher, because the teacher has different ways of looking at it, at things, and every student has a different way of understanding. So what I do with them is I set in the lesson plan a requirement of different elements which they have to think, which is, for example, the form, the linguistic topic as a form. Is there going to be a grammar form or a vocabulary or a notion of the language that is going to be mainly used and focused? That's one of the aspects. The other aspect would be, what is the function of it? What is it going to be used for in this case? Well, it has a function, but it may have two different functions with slight variation. So what is the function it's going to be used for in this class? And what is the context also? What is the real life situation in which you are going to implement this idea of the class, all right? And other those three main elements are the ones I ask for, but also I always ask them something I call the language focus example. It's write a sample of a student's production when it comes to production, even though if it's not going to come to in this class to production, maybe it's going to be in the understanding field, in the introduction field to the topic during the class. But sooner or later, you have to come to the idea of development and students using the language. So give me an example of what you expect them to do. And then from all these four ideas, students get to structure a sentence in an objective way, which I preferably tend to use the aspects of behavior and degree from the ABCD method of learning. But the idea, more than stating degree, is them to comprehend that it's not just one element, the objective of the class. From all of these aspects, for some of them it's easier to think when you actually make them think about the example, it's easier to think about the example. For some others, it's easier to think about the grammar term they're going to have, like the notion of the language they're going to use. For some others, I want them to describe, or I want them to do this kind of communication. In other words, like the function, right? The function of the language. So in that sense, they can structure the way in which they complement their thought in any way they start. It's just makes sense that everything aligns, that you actually have a form that it's it's aligned with the function that it's intended for the class. And at the same time, that it's also coherent with the context that it's going to be used. And at the same time, that you have actual examples, simple examples that can be produced by students sooner or later. And all of those, you can put them into a sentence which you can call objective. But the important thing is that you have to have in mind what and this also including the skills focus in the class. And all of these have to give you the idea of this is what I want to be in constant exposure during the class in any way.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier there the word context, and I'm really curious. I mean, I think, is it worse? Do we just think of context as kind of, okay, imagine you're in the doctor's office and this is...
That's another thing, right? That's another whole topic.
Right, that's one thing. And linking that, the difficulty, I would think, of setting up context, because it's so important when you're talking about, you know, relationships of speakers, you know, formal, informal, register, you know, and all of that, you know, all of the things that go into the context. But you also mentioned evaluation. And so right. how do you connect the dots there? How do you link that? How do you guide, how does a teacher just getting into the field try to wrap their heads around all of that, trying to piece it all together, thinking, does the assessment come first? Do they think about assessment first? Or do they tend to think of it after the instruction, after the planning, and they've gotten into the class and dealing with this complicated subject of context and language?
I think teachers can come with smart ways of, let me put it with an analogy, with smart ways of asking questions, right? With questions that go along a talk and a topic which are used for different purposes. And I think most teachers are clever enough as to elaborate the question. But if you think on the answer first, you're going to have a better question yet. If you think on the expected answer, I was thinking about Ken's talk last week about flipped classroom. It's on the screen right now from the previous show. And yes, he's talking about the students go and do the research, and we actually do the task in here. So this is kind of an analogy. Evaluation in the class, if you start from that end, if you start thinking about how am I going to, maybe not in the sense of putting the number or scoring the students just explained, but as what am I going to be able to see or hear from students that is showing me that they actually achieve something in language communication? If you think in the evaluation in any way, I think it's going to give you the better question to ask and the better way to get to it. Because otherwise, if you think first on the question, on the way, it may lead to different paths since we have individuals as students. But if you think about the answer first, if you think about the evaluation first, if you think about what the outcomes are, and this is what I want my teachers to do when they think about the language focus example. What do you expect them to say or write or understand? Because that's what you want to reinforce, expose them, and do it over and over again during the class. And now you can do it through a quick video or through repetitions or through drillings or maybe through research, analysis, students creation, I don't know, whatever approach you follow, but that's the kind of exposure you want, even though they are not yet able to handle it or produce it. That's what you want them, you want to have in your classroom at all time. So yes, evaluation, it's one of the easiest way, in my opinion. Think about on matters of what you expect as an outcome from students and what characteristic that may have as part of the evaluation in as a way to determine clarity on the starting point and the goal as a path for the class.
I think better for worse, we teach how we're going to end up testing. And I don't mean to say that we teach to the test, but however students...
Sorry, Ben. I can listen to you a little bit choppy. Can you repeat that again?
Sure. You mentioned about, evaluation. And I think for better or for worse, we teach the way that we end up testing our students. And I don't mean to say that we teach to the test, but what I mean is however we plan on, evaluating our students, whether it's through performance, whether it's multiple choice, whether it's, some sort of presentation, however we decide to evaluate our students, that's going to influence heavily how we teach. And again, that can be something positive, that can be something negative in the sense of maybe standardized testing or some sort of exit exam where, it's a high stakes situation and it's multiple choice. And maybe that's the only way that students are being evaluated, right? That's going to really dictate how we teach. But I think that, you mentioned something interesting about questions. And I remember teaching a discourse analysis course where we talked a lot about becoming aware of how we ask questions, how we can record our voice and really look and reflect on not only the types of questions that we ask throughout maybe a 15-minute class, but the order in which we ask those questions, the sequence of the questions that we ask. And I really encourage everyone out there to take one class and just record yourself one class and just see what kind of questions you ask and how you organize those questions based on responses that you're getting in the class. I think it's very eye-opening. And, when we're teaching the class, we're not always aware, I think, of those types of questions or those types of ways that we're articulating or communicating with our students, because we're thinking about other things. But I think it really would be helpful, I think, to become aware of how we're asking those questions so that we kind of see, well, what's working, what's the best or not so best way of asking certain types of questions, really to promote this deeper learning, this critical thinking, looking at, down the road, how we're going to be evaluating, if it's some sort of performance, how can this class lead or enable students to do something else later on? So it becomes kind of a cumulative effect of learning and gaining knowledge and gaining skills over time. But yeah, I think that's interesting. And I think it begins all with this idea of planning. Thinking about these objectives, when I watched that video, I think it was eye-opening because of the different ways of looking at objectives, really. And you've touched on it, very clearly here that there are different ways. Maybe it depends on the student. Maybe it depends on the class itself, the types of students. Maybe the age of the students, the level of the students, and perhaps even the school, depending on what kind of curriculum they have. Maybe some of those objectives are set in stone. Maybe it comes from a book. I mean, I think we've seen cases where the curriculum actually comes from the scope and sequence of a book, which we can discuss later on what right. that entails. But it's a complex question, and I think it's something that we all should think about. And again, I think if we can hear from the audience and let us know what you think, what kind of approaches you're taking with planning, that would be great. Right, We'd like to hear from you hear from you as far as what works in the classroom and what doesn't work.
Right. And the second aspect in here would be the activity itself and the activities in the classroom, which the situation and the aspect, the importance of talking about the activity in here is that some teachers that come to me with their lesson plans, the first thing they think about, it's an activity. And they think about having students, yes, but they think about the students from the perspective of Oh, I need to wake them up. I need to have them active. I need to do an activity which they enjoy, so they enjoy the class. And they think about activities, and they tend to think about interactive contests or games or things like this aspect, which I'm totally for it. And I know many teachers may not, but I'm totally for. But the situation in here is that it's easier that way, that the teacher leans towards focusing the class on doing the activity and having this game or this class or this contest. And what about the objective, the language objective for the class, right? And sometimes we even sacrifice the objective for the sake of we are having a good time in class. The students are really paying attention and are really engaged in the activity, and they are trying to, to complete the worksheet or to finish the task or win the game. But at the end, it's a very complex game which takes them through a lot of activities and paths, which at the end up in the repetition of one word. Or maybe you have, you as a teacher, this is something I ask my students to think about. What is your perception of the practice from students? Yes, they practice a lot. And then, okay, let's be a little bit squared and think about numbers. How many times did they actually went through the structure during the class? Oh, like, I don't know, during the activity, in this activity was 10 minutes, and they did it like 15 times. All right. And I was like, did all students really went through it 15 times? Were they really exposed? Or, well, it was one participant did it once, and then another participant did it another time. And then, okay, so you spend 10, 15 minutes in a game in which they did a lot of things, just to one sentence. And at the end, just one, each student, and not all of them, just the one that came to participate, practiced one time or had exposure to the new feature in one time. Though you as a teacher, you view the reign of students doing something, but it's just one time. So the idea is not get rid of the activity or do another activity. What I encourage them to do is same activity. And now the challenge is do not change the activity. Adapt the activity and whatever is necessary to do in there so that they have enough exposure to the language in the way that the activity intends. Like, is the activity for a presentation of the different examples? Is the activity for students to practice something or produce from their own or have an integration of different topics? Okay. But I want you to manage to adapt that activity in a way that they can actually have longer exposure to more times in listening, speaking, reading, or writing of this feature. And well, that's my point of view and my approach so far. And as you say, it would be really interesting to see how teachers are approaching this planning and this idea, because as a closure to this, I've come to see teachers that plan starting from the activity, but at the end they manage to have a good achievement of objectives. Because the activity itself, they have this skill of matching the activity automatically with the objective. So it's not really the activity. It goes along with the objective. But it's not that easy to do. So, yes, the question is there. What would be other paths to structure our lesson of the day with the idea of exposing the students to the language in the way that the lesson is intended to?
I think here it's important to mention or make a distinction between the word activity, what is an activity versus a performance, because we've talked again a lot about this topic of another day. But very briefly, if we look at it, me personally, when I think of the word performance, I think of performance tests from Wiggins and McTighe's Understanding by Design, and really looking at building up to that performance. So as your students are saying, okay, they're thinking maybe first of an activity, well, maybe they can think first of a performance, which would be more involved, something that that students would have to work towards over a period of certain days or weeks in order to complete, and then look at all individual activities, like I think that you're mentioning, and looking at how those build on each other over time, so that when they come to do the performance, they're able to do it. That doesn't mean necessarily that they're constantly doing the performance, but they're constantly working towards that. So, for example, that might be an activity one day, maybe it's a handout another day, maybe it's a certain other type of activity another day, but you're looking at it kind of as a progression of skills and knowledge and whatever else they need to do the performance. And I have spoken to other teachers about this, and I feel that the more that students know what the performance is, and the more that the students can buy into this idea that they like to do this, or they would like to do this performance in the future, even though maybe they're not prepared to do so at that time, that ends up driving motivation because they're leading up to that performance. I think the simplest analogy for me is baseball, big baseball fan, St. Louis Cardinals, love them, they're great. But the idea is that you work towards playing the game. So what does that mean? Well, maybe you take ground balls, you learn how to, use your glove and pick up a ball, throw the ball, hit the ball, bunt, steal. You learn all these individual aspects of the game, but the idea is that you're building up to actually playing the game. So I think that if we can try to bring that into the classroom and really find ways of coming up with these performance tests, and this is a perfect opportunity where teachers can work together and develop together these performance tests that work and use those and adapt those and modify those to each class, each particular group, again, as a means of promoting motivation and trying to get them to see the complexity of, and in this case, not just being able to speak or write, but to think and to communicate and to argue and to persuade and so on.
Yes, but yeah, I see where you're going to, because that was the beginning of this segment. It's I mean, there's no end to this. Yeah. We can keep on talking and talking, but you were going towards the idea of the previous segment of today's program, which is the deep learning. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We have come to a moment in which we realize that just as the skills and language are not in isolation, all these aspects of deep learning, of attitudes, behaviors, and the use of language itself, and many other aspects come around to be part of the development of students, as to be successful users of the language in a world in which they're going to the real context of it, it's interactions with other human beings. So I understand pretty much what you're going towards this, and I think we would need long talks about different topics and go through these minimals and go through many aspects as to be clear. But I think today we raised several questions and important aspects from our points of view, and that's the idea, to raise a question and have students and have teachers and have the pre-service and in-service teachers to ask the questions to themselves, to wonder, what am I doing in the classroom? Am I really doing things with a purpose? Am I having an objective? Am I going through this deep learning? Am I focusing on the activities? Am I entertaining students? Or am I entertaining students with purpose? Or what's the idea? Okay. So share with us, please. Share with us all your comments, your ideas, and whatever you have to say. As Ben usually mentions, if you disagree with us, tell us, because that's the idea, to share our experiences and see which other paths can be taken inside the classroom and outside the classroom in our lives as teachers.
But don't forget our Facebook page. And yes, comments there. You reach out to our websites. Let us know You know, if you are in contact with us at school, of course, let us know what you think. And if you ever want to participate in our live broadcast, feel free to contact us. We're always looking for guests. We have some very special guests scheduled here in the future that we're planning, but we're always looking for more participation. So let us know, and we have no problem bringing you into these live broadcasts to discuss with you different topics of the day related to teaching and learning. I think now we're getting close to time, but we always like to end briefly at the end of our broadcast to talk about some shared experiences. So, Pidi, I don't know if you have anything to share for this week.
Sorry, just to make a mention, something that is working really good for me is in the classes that I've taught during these previous 2 weeks, I've been adding in the presentations, in the PowerPoint presentations I use, I'm adding one slide with a screenshot of an article related to the topic, like extended information, or in another occasion I did it with one of the aspects to mention about the topic. But in that slide, I do not make any explanation. I just invite the students to look at the article, and then I upload the article to a Facebook group we have, and I encourage them to, I just mention what is the slide about, what is the aspect about, what is the article about, and I encourage them to go and look for it, and it seems that some of them are actually going and looking at the articles, and I just wanted to share that. I think it's nothing new. I'm sure somebody has done this before, but I like the idea, and I think it's something I'm going to keep on doing it because it saves time a little bit. If you want to extend more, you can round edges and leave certain things for the article, and you can take certain aspects just to raise interest and just mention them very briefly. Or if you have many aspects to cover in few time, you can select a couple of the aspects of the topic that you want to make clear, and just lead the students towards the reference. And the idea in here is that I not only just mention it, I put on a screenshot with what I consider maybe interesting to look at, an image from the article, or sometimes there's a diagram or a graph. I put it there. And it looks like some of them are actually going and looking at it.
Okay. What I would like to share is just very briefly, you know, since I teach a lot of writing classes, a lot of my experiences are related to those types of issues. This week we worked a lot as my students are developing academic essays, and many of these students are creating an academic essay for the first time. We talked a lot about, and we have talked a lot about in the past, the importance of setting up a thesis statement, the main idea. And I think this links a little bit to what we talked about today, when it's interesting that throughout the writing process, we keep coming back to the main idea. Like, what is the purpose of writing this particular text in this case? And it's not because I'm asking for it. It's not because it's for a grade. It should be for some quote unquote authentic or purposeful situation. So a lot of times students will have to imagine, because we're not yet in a position to actually write essays for a real live audience. But the idea is to think of in terms of who might read this, who's it for, really trying to look for a target audience, not just a potential audience, but the main audience, the main group of people who would benefit the most from having read their articles. And really, this helps students move and try to limit their language when they start using words like people or person, these nondescript words that are being used that really are not very descriptive and to why they're actually writing this. So, you know, if you're teaching students to, even if it's like speaking, if it's public speaking, or if it's just some sort of presentation, whatever they're doing, trying to figure out, well, what's the purpose or what's the main idea of what I'm trying to communicate or what I'm trying to do? Who's the audience? What's the relationship between you, the creator, either the writer, the speaker, and the audience, and really looking at language, again, well, I'll use the word context, trying to figure out, okay, what's the context of this situation? And having them be able to justify why they're doing certain things, whether, again, it's within a text or if it's within a presentation, but kind of looking and talking kind of meta about their work and the language. And I think if we look at it like this, things like context become a little bit more apparent. They become more obvious. And we stop looking at these isolated work or activities that really have no context or maybe have less of a purpose than what they might have otherwise. So I just wanted to share that. And the way that that we work, we're lucky at the university to have screens and computers in each of our school, each of our classrooms. So a lot of our students, in my case, they can benefit. I can share work among each of the students. We work very transparently. All of my feedback that I give students, everyone sees all my feedback and everyone sees each other's work. So it's kind of a combination of having this meta conversation about thesis or the main idea or the purpose of one's work and this idea of trying to work as transparent as possible. So that's basically all I have. Petey, I don't know if you have anything else.
Well, no, just to invite our audience to go back to previous videos. Many of the things we discussed today are related to previous topics. Context itself, well, I think we discussed something about context on some of the second or third program, I guess, very briefly. But I would be interested of talking again about this context idea, and I like the way this is working in the show, having all these different talks which at the end come together and have a vision of in this case today, I guess we're talking about the purposes of classes, of the task, of the activities, of writing, purposes in general. And we can skip to evaluation and context and see all these topics. Tell us what you are interested in listening or sharing with us.
Same way, I always finish these conversations with a list of things that we can talk about in the future. But again, we would rather hear from you and hear what you would like us to talk about. So again, feel free to let us know if you want to propose a topic, whether you want to participate or not. Please do so. We want to make this as open as possible. So if we don't hear from you, we'll keep coming up with topics. We have there's no shortage of topics for us to talk about. But yeah, let us know. We really appreciate you listening and watching both in the live broadcast and in the videos. Again, we hope to see you in a future broadcast. I think that's all I have for now. Petey, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. And from my end, wish everyone the best, and we'll see you in the next broadcast.
Thank you, Ben, and everybody, thank you for watching and listening. Keep on learning.